Institute for Faith and Freedom at Grove City College presents Liberty Mail with the student fellows of Faith and Freedom.
Hello and welcome to Liberty Mail. I'm Grace Riley, and I'm joined by a special guest here today, Jonathan McGee, who is a junior at Grove City College. He's a fellow for the Institute for Faith and Freedom, and he's majoring in political science, minoring in business. So we're excited to have him on today. We're here in the underground studio recording for the Institute for Faith and Freedom, and just some things to check out. Moving forward, we have a spring conference coming up on Post-Roe America. This will be April 13th and 14th, which you can find out more about on our website, faithandfreedom.com. So feel free to check that out. But we're so excited to have Jonathan here today. So hi, Jonathan.
Yeah, hi. It's good to be here today.
Yeah, thank you for joining me. Tell our viewers a bit about yourself.
Yeah, so my name is Jonathan McGee. As Grace said, I'm a junior political science major here at the college. And really honored to be part of the fellows for the Institute for Faith and Freedom. So I'm from a small town in central Pennsylvania called Clearfield. It's about an hour from State College, where Penn State University is. And yeah, I've just really enjoyed being at the college and been working in conservative politics and in the conservative movement since I was about 16. So really excited to be here on the podcast today.
Wow, that's awesome. So kind of going into that, for the Institute for Faith and Freedom, what are some of the things that you're involved in, and what is your favorite part about being a fellow for the Institute?
Yeah, so I serve as the managing editor of our news website, checkpointnews.org. So I'm responsible mostly for the administration of the website. I post all of the articles and kind of give them one final look through before to make sure that none of our other editors miss something. So yeah, I've really enjoyed that aspect of the job.
Yeah, and for everyone listening, check out Checkpoint if you haven't. You can find it on the Institute's website as well.
Yes. Yeah, and we have a lot of great articles by many of our fellows and other Grove City students as well. The other main thing I do as a fellow is event planning. So I organize a community lecture series for members of the Grove City community to give them a better idea of what the Institute and the rest of the college does. And so we've been able to grow that slowly last semester, and we're looking forward to having another one of those later this month.
That's awesome. So kind of moving into some things. So over this past summer, you worked in D.C.
You had an internship,
and you basically, you know, walked the walk as a conservative in D.C. Can you tell me a little bit about what that was like, what your internship was for, and what you learned from that?
Yeah, so over the summer, I interned for a small Washington, D.C. think tank called Capital Research Center. And Capital Research Center primarily studies left-wing political donors and how their money goes through political institutions and is used to influence the public policy process. So we do a lot of work based around people like George Soros, who I'm sure you've heard of, and really other major left-wing donors who are using their money, using the products of capitalism to fund a radical agenda that is really hurting people all across the country. So I really enjoyed that. I also just enjoyed being in D.C. I think D.C. gets a bad rap from a lot of people for being kind of part of the swamp. But in my experience, there's a lot of really great conservatives in D.C. who are really fighting the good fight. They're, you know, outnumbered in a lot of ways. They're living in a very hostile environment, but they're really just trying to do the right thing for the country. And I think, too, also there's a lot of really good Christians in D.C. as well. I was really blessed to attend Capitol Hill Baptist Church over the summer, which is a wonderful church that's only a few blocks from the Capitol. And they were, you know, doing their best, promoting the gospel, sharing Jesus. And so that was just really inspiring to see.
Yeah, that is really encouraging. And it's interesting. See, I'm one of the people that probably doesn't particularly care for D.C. or always talk about it in the best light, because I feel that way. I don't like D.C. I don't like how toxic the political sphere is there and the corruption and whatnot. But it is true, what you're saying, that there is a good community of Christian conservatives in D.C. still, which is so important because we need people doing that work. And that's really the front lines where Christian conservatives need to be to really make a difference. And even off of what you're saying, when I've visited D.C., I've done some work with Young Women for America and Concerned Women for America, and mm-hmm. they have a wonderful community of Christian conservative women. But also through that, I attended church with them, and they had a lot of young people there that had community groups and whatnot. So there's definitely Christian community in D.C. if you look for it, which is encouraging. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's definitely so important that conservatives are kind of in that climate. But I guess just going off of that, in your experience, so talking about being a conservative in D.C. is one thing, but how would you describe that as a young person in general? Because obviously there's the stereotype of, oh, well, young people aren't usually as conservative, and we're here at Grove City College, a Christian conservative school, so we're fortunate to be surrounded by like-minded mm-hmm. people for the most part. But at most other universities across the country, down to high school and the elementary levels, there's a lot of, you know, leftism everywhere pretty much. A lot mm-hmm. of people our age are not conservative. What's your take on that kind of as a young conservative?
Yeah, so I mean, obviously almost all of my friends at Grove City are pretty good conservative Christian people. But I think for maybe people that I know that aren't at Grove City, there's definitely much less of an interest in religion. So a lot of them, I don't think, they're not really Christian. They don't attend church on a weekly basis. But in certain circles, I do think that there's a lot of kind of conservative tendencies, even if they don't maybe formally define it as much as like we might do here. But there's certainly kind of an impulse of maybe don't trust the government entirely, certainly an impulse against a lot of the woke things that are being taught in college. Because I think even young people can truly just see the ridiculousness of so many of these things, whether it comes to, you know, trans issues or, you know, just other left-wing things where they don't want to toe the party line and they don't want to just fall in line and be told what to do. They kind of, they're capable of thinking for themselves and they kind of have a good head on their shoulders and a good common sense to figure out that a lot of the stuff that they're being told by their professors just isn't really true.
Yeah, that is a good point. And I think there is a pretty good group of young people across our country that are like that and that are not influenced by what they hear, kind of are able to look at it with more of a discerning eye and see how see the patterns of history in a sense of certain policies or things that leftist professors might be talking about. But at the same time, I kind of think of, even just thinking about social media, there's such a pressure on young people to conform to the left. Like, I mm-hmm. even think back to yeah. when all the Black Lives Matter things were very prevalent in the news. There was the Black Square
where I'd unfollow a lot of people.
Yeah,
after that.
Well, and what happened is a lot of people were pressured, socially pressured, to mm-hmm. post a Black Square on their story in solidarity with Black Lives Matter, and it was the whole point was to make it seem like if you weren't posting this square, then you were racist. And
sure.
to post the square means that you're against racism. But the deeper roots of that ended up being that organization is also a Marxist organization that had mm-hmm. a lot of other goals and policies that had nothing to do with are you racist or not. So the point is, back
yeah.
during that time, I think a lot of young people felt the pressure to just socially conform to some ideas on the left. And I think the left
yeah.
does pressure young people.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And I do think a lot of this comes from ignorance as well. Obviously, not everyone learns as much about politics as what we do or has as good of an understanding of America's founding. So I think, there's just kind of a pressure to, yeah, as you said, get along, not really rock the boat, even if people don't believe something entirely. But I think that there's tremendous upside in conservatives trying to educate young people on here's the dangers of socialism, here's the dangers of, you know, this woke cultural agenda. And I remember a while back I was listening to Charlie Kirk's podcast, and he was talking about how at UC Berkeley, which is one of the main progenitors of left-wing propaganda, really, mm-hmm. And he mentioned how he talked to so many young people there who said that they had never really heard conservative arguments before. So I think that there's a lot of upside in what conservatives and Christians as well can really be doing in many of these institutions that are very left-wing.
Yeah, that's a really, really good point. And I agree with you. I think a lot of maybe what we could call the ignorance of young people in regard to politics, or maybe thinking things like socialism or communism is a good idea. Mm-hmm. And I say that supported by even what comes to mind is that there was a statistic by victims of communism. I don't remember the exact numbers, but it was to the effect of there's a large majority of young people who say that they would support socialism, but only a small percentage could actually define socialism in that group.
Mm-hmm,
so
exactly.
The point is, a lot of people say that they would support these ideas but don't understand what they really mean. And I think that that's a really great opportunity for conservatives, as you're mm-hmm. saying, where there's a really big opportunity to try to spread the truth and, you know, promote education about the truth of some of these things and teach mm-hmm. people, well, what is socialism really? What does communism really mean? And how did these ideas unfold in practice? How have they unfolded mm-hmm. throughout history? How would they unfold now if implemented? So I think that's a really good point that, yes, there's a really big opportunity where a lot of young people aren't necessarily bad intention, but they just don't understand the full extent of some of these issues.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I think, too, another big thing that we are fortunate to have at Grove City College is a real background in Western civilization and what the importance of that is. And I feel like a lot of young people, they just don't really have that. And I think that if we could get more school choice, more of an effort to teach those kind of things, that would go a long way towards helping our young people as well.
Yeah, that's a really good point. So just moving on a little bit, what is an important issue or what are some important political topics that are prevalent right now that stick out to you or that you're personally passionate about and think more attention should be on?
Yeah, so I think a couple of things come to mind. First of all, would be the trans issue. And I think that, in my personal opinion, it's the most important issue in America right now. And I think that that's really because we're discussing or we're debating what is reality. And we're not even just talking about dispute over facts, over what, you know, for example, a baby in the womb is, or the status of that. We're really talking about how do we see truth and how do we define truth and really just the fundamental questions of civilization and existence are at stake here. And I guess the other one I would be really passionate about is originalism and kind of this idea of preserving the founding, preserving what the founding documents meant and save them against people who would want to distort their meaning for their own, really, their own selfish purposes.
Yeah, no, those are great points. So we'll go through both of those, but just starting with the transgender issue, I think you're highlighting a really important point about the war on truth that is happening in culture, where this mm-hmm. is a lot deeper than just one, you know, segment of current political debate. This is about the ultimate truth of the most basic scientific reality that there mm-hmm. is of what a man is and what a woman is. And
yeah.
obviously,
yeah.
As a Christian, that's, you know, the first things outlined by God in the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
So, and obviously a Christian argument is not going to be effective for non-Christians out in, you know, the secular world necessarily. But the very basic point is that it's a scientific reality. And you're right that mm-hmm. when, you know, that's neglected and we decide, well, anything goes, your truth is whatever you want it to be, reality is whatever you feel like it is, what does that mean then for other things? And what precedent mm-hmm. does that set? And I think
yeah.
we're seeing the problems of that. And also we're mm-hmm. seeing a lot of the consequences of real people who have been impacted by transitioning young and regretting
yeah,
it and their lives being ruined and changed forever.
Yeah, and I think that's a really important point right there is that we're not really helping these people by kind of confirming what they may or may not think in their head, right? If someone has schizophrenia or would say that they're a cow or something, like the medically correct and compassionate thing to do is not to affirm that and try and support that lifestyle. It's to give those people help. It's to get them into therapy and, you know, truly help heal their mind rather than just kind of try and confirm that delusion and leave them really empty with no purpose and a wreck of their former selves, as well as, I think you said, a lot of the detransitioners like Chloe Cole, mm-hmm. who do a really good job of highlighting just the absolute barbarity that so much that the left really does when they do these things.
Yeah, and the detransitioners and Chloe Cole, that's a really good example of someone who says that they wish that people had stopped them and come to them and said, mm-hmm. this isn't right. And they just wish that someone had spoke up for them and advocated for mm-hmm. them in their best interest. And even in a fun movie, a funny thing to watch is Matt Walsh's What is a Woman?
Yeah,
that breaks down the basic question for people who mm-hmm. haven't seen that. It's by done by Matt Walsh for The Daily Wire, and he basically conducted a documentary asking a variety of people, from academics to left-wing philosophers and professors, to men, to women, to people who are transgender. He asked everyone the question, what is a woman? Mm-hmm. And he could not find an answer because no one wanted to define it. They wanted it to be a subjective thing, not an objective reality, which that's mm-hmm. a really crazy thing. I mean,
it is, yeah.
Yeah, and it really sheds light on that.
Yeah, I think the part of that movie that most kind of stood out to me was when he went to Africa to see, I believe it was the Maasai tribe or something, but they who live, you know, a very primitive lifestyle with not really a lot of contact from other civilizations or anything, even they kind of understood this fundamental biological reality that so many of the left-wing professors and activists just really could not understand.
Yeah, and what happened was Matt Walsh asked this tribe, what do you think about a woman becoming a man or a man mm-hmm. becoming a woman? And they laughed. They laughed.
Yeah,
they thought
did.
It was, they could not even wrap their heads around that, which mm-hmm. I think that's just really interesting. But mm-hmm. I mean, in what you're talking about as well, I think it's important as Christians to approach that type of situation with love, but also with truth, as you're saying, because it's not loving to not provide the truth.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't be, I don't think it's loving to affirm something to avoid controversy. That's
mm-hmm.
not what we're called to do. But also, it wouldn't be the right thing either if love wasn't paired with that. So I think mm-hmm. finding that balance as Christians is really important with such an emotional and, you know, issue that carries so much weight.
It is. And I think the same thing applies to abortion as well. It's very important to approach the issue with compassion and realize that what we're advocating for really is the morally correct and compassionate thing to do. And that is just so powerful, I think, in a world where there's just so much hate, you know, and division and, you know, even with social media, as we talked about earlier, I think that goes a long way in this present world.
Yeah, absolutely. And just moving before we close on to originalism,
mm-hmm.
Do you want to just break down that and break down what you think the left and just politics in general nowadays gets wrong about how they interpret the Constitution? Because I mm-hmm. can think of a variety of examples of, you know, people arguing about what certain things mean in the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can think of a lot of things nowadays, and I'm sure everyone can think mm-hmm. of things where people argue about, the Second Amendment doesn't really mean that you should have guns. There's a lot mm-hmm. a lot like that. So break that down a bit.
Yeah, so originalism at its really simplest form is just the idea that judges should interpret the Constitution according to what the original public meaning of the document was. And it's this idea that the Constitution does not change over time, as a lot of left-wing people would have you to believe. You know, there is a meaning. It was, you know, written down in 1787 and amended many times throughout American history. And so that's really just the basic idea of originalism. Now, there is one slight variant that is prominent in some conservative legal circles, and that's called textualism, which is the idea that judges should look at the text and only the text of the Constitution rather than considering the relevant history and other writings when they're working through their cases. So Justice Gorsuch would be an example of textualism. But on the left, really the main theory of constitutional interpretation, if you want to call it interpretation, is the idea of the living Constitution. That was first discussed by Justice Brennan, who has written, well, he's dead now, but he wrote numerous articles and gave a lot of speeches about this. And his basic idea behind this is that the Constitution changes over time and that essentially that as long as a Democratic majority in the country wants something done, they can do it without really regard to what the original public meaning of the Constitution was. So obviously that can get very dangerous and can certainly lead to, as you mentioned, you know, even with things like the Second Amendment, is obviously incorrect and really can hurt a lot of people and restrict access to rights that are clearly defined in the Constitution and in natural law as well. So that, yeah. So I don't know if you have anything else you want to add about that.
Yeah, no, that sounds good. Are you able to break down an example of this just in current politics or a court case that's, being faced right now?
Yeah, so I think that the Dobbs decision last summer is a really good example of justices doing originalism and doing it very well and considering the text, history, and tradition of the Constitution. Another case that the Supreme Court heard this term is called 303 Creative, and it's about the free speech rights. So that's another example of where I think probably the majority opinion will sort of go through an originalist meaning of what does freedom of speech mean, and does it apply to this particular woman's speech in 303 Creative. So Alliance Defending Freedom is the plaintiff in that case, and we certainly hope that they're successful to sort of expand free speech rights for all Americans of all religious beliefs.
Yeah, no, well, that's great. And this has been a really great conversation. I hope you've all enjoyed it listening. And just before we close, do you have any closing thoughts?
So I'm really blessed to be a fellow at the Institute, and I hope that people continue to enjoy the podcast and continue to check out Checkpoint News.
Yeah, and check out Checkpoint for Jonathan's articles and other student fellows' articles. And just thank you for tuning in to Liberty Mail today. We hope you enjoyed this conversation, and we'll check out our other episodes. So thank you so much for tuning in. Be sure to like, subscribe, and we'll see you next week.
For more information on the Institute for Faith and Freedom, visit faithandfreedom.com.